This is Rock Isn't Dead, It's Just Sleeping. With your hosts, William Whitebread and Mark Audio Slave Stewart.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Rock Isn't Dead, It's Just Sleeping, with me, Willie Whitebread.
And Mark the Audio Slave.
And back again as a new and permanent member of our tribe, Delta Drew Pearson.
Love it.
He's back with us, and we've been on a little bit of a hiatus due to the holidays. I'm sure all of you have been on a hiatus as well.
Merry Festivus.
Yeah, from
Happy New Year, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Happy Winter Solstice, all that happy shit. So I'm sure everybody's been on a little bit of a hiatus from something, from sobriety, from, you know, your waistlines and jobs, everything else.
We all have our vices during the holidays.
Yeah. So what are we back to talk about today, fellers?
Today we're going to go delving headfirst into the topic of the old festival at Rome, New York.
Yeah, the old Woodstock 99.
The 99 Woodstock.
Something I wish I was at.
Kind of fitting because, okay,
the
so
bad one.
I was thinking this is kind of fitting because we are kind of going into a new decade right now, being 2019.
Yeah.
So it's only fitting to be our last show of 2019 to have a show of the previous decade.
Here, here.
The 99.
Here.
Didn't they just cancel the one from 2019, by the way?
What's that?
I hope so.
Woodstock?
They had one?
They had one planned.
They
canceled it.
Wasn't that because they were the same promoters from the Firefest?
No, Ja Rule was up there promoting it.
I think it was because just the ticket sales and I think the promoters were fucking retarded.
Gee, I wonder why.
And also the lineup sucked llama dicks.
It did.
It was like what, Post Malone and like Carlos Santana's daughter or something.
Jay-Z,
stupid.
I think it was on there.
Jay-Z.
AKA every other festival.
Yeah,
America.
We're done. Oh, yeah. Jay-Z.
Yeah.
Fuck out of here.
Fucking Woodstock.
Yeah, at Woodstock.
Yeah.
So now a lot of people kind of realize that Woodstock 99 was the post Woodstock 94.
Yep. So, post Woodstock 94.
Well, I mean, there's probably a lot of cats out there who, especially you millennial cats, who don't realize that there was a Woodstock 94. Hey, maybe you guys don't even realize that there was a Woodstock 99. I mean,
yeah, maybe not.
But now you get the twofer.
Maybe not.
There's a twofer going on
right here. And YouTube, actually, if you ever, if you're curious about the set list or what they played or what went on at Woodstock 99, they have full documentaries on Woodstock 99 on YouTube, and they have every single band that plays set list. They have videos from there because MTV, the budding MTV that just then came into the prime in the late 90s. They just built up momentum, and MTV is like this music superpower of the television networks right now. They were all live on scene filming this fucking day of love and these days of happiness. No, they were filming this fucking chaos.
Yeah.
That was Woodstock. Well,
I think it was MTV 2. MTV really didn't have. I think it was MTV 2, right?
During was
99,
it?
No, 99. It probably is both.
Was it?
It was probably
MTV 3?
Listen, it was probably. Honestly, it was probably MTV 1 was kind of doing highlights and stuff, and they were still doing the news, you know, and
it was
all that.
3, fuck it.
But then MTV 2 was kind of there. That was the only thing.
It was MTV Viva La Bam edition.
They had the people, they had the troops on the ground. Their reporters were on the ground the entire time until that infamous, you know, Saturday Night Limp Bizkit set.
Yeah,
and then they pulled them.
So. Okay, so let's back up. We'll set the scene here a little
bit.
So the first Woodstock was in 69. Obviously, everybody knows that Woodstock.
Peace, love, and granola.
Peace, love, and granola. And that festival in and of itself was a shit show, but the time in that era, like the mindset in that era, was good for that kind of shit show.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because everybody was so helpful. Everybody was about like, okay, how can we help this? And guys, we're getting the National Guard in here to bring some water. Just hang tight. And everyone was like, yeah, man, far out. We're just going to hang tight. Yeah.
We're just going to sit here and smoke our shitty weed and be ready for it.
We're going to hang out. So it was the perfect atmosphere because, you know, every decade in music brings about a different atmosphere and a different, I would say, clientele. Right, a different attitude in music.
Right,
and the main difference, other than 3 decades between 69 Woodstock and 99 Woodstock, is Woodstock 99 was the budding of the hard rock stuff. like the hard new metal, I would
new
say.
New metal, absolutely.
It was the budding of new metal. And so when you're going to have a magnitude of that many people, say 400,000, right?
Which is a big crowd.
Insane.
How many people were at the original? Do you know that?
I do not know. I think it was around the same.
Really? Because like we were talking earlier, I've been to a festival where there was 100,000 people, and that was the max cap that they had for that fest. And that's a lot of fucking people.
Yeah.
I can only imagine four times the amount of people. I mean, I don't know if your parents went or your parents went to Woodstock, but my mom went to Woodstock and she said she got there on Friday and she didn't get in until Saturday.
Yeah. 500,000 people at Woodstock 69.
Yeah.
Gnarly.
Because of the amount of cars and everything that they were waiting in line.
Right. And so with Woodstock 69, you didn't have they had some pseudo barricades because they ran out of time. You know,
yeah,
they're building
yeah,
up.
Yeah.
They were building up. Everything was so rushed, right? Woodstock 99 wasn't that way. They had built barricades because in the 69 one, people were just walking in without tickets.
I mean, you got to think of the era too, man. I mean, the mentality was way different from
absolutely
69 to 99.
Absolutely. You know, people were very, like when the announcer would come on stage and say, "Hey guys, so Brenda, your dad's been wondering where you are. If you could go ahead and try and call him, that'd be yeah. far out." Yeah.
And now Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Well, yeah. And now here's Carlos Santana, man. Give him a big hand.
Yeah.
You know? But at Woodstock 99, they had email tents.
Well, they only had, like, what, one main stage, right, at Woodstock. I mean, they didn't mm-hmm. have multiple stages like we do
right.
in current festivals.
They were playing all night long.
Exactly. Like, right. I think CCR did go on at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning. Yep. in the Woodstock era.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that was the main differences. Is this one they tried to learn from their mistakes, right? Because obviously it was a lack of security at the last one, lack of provisions, lack of supervision, right? And so it was just an insane free-for-all. Yeah. Now you have the budding of new metal, you have a different decade of music, you have a different decade of human being and music listened to as a whole.
Right.
So they're going to prepare for that.
A lot of selfish fucks going on
yeah.
in the ground.
Once they fucking can, dude, even 94... They still had the mud pits. They did it there.
Mm-hmm.
So then they changed. They changed the venue. They changed the venue, and they thought it would have been smart doing where they did it on that Air Force base. Dude.
Right.
Did they have mud pits in the original Woodstock too?
I'm sure the whole place was a fucking mud pit.
I mean,
dude.
It was on the same grounds. So.
Well, I'm just saying. I don't remember like mud people until like Lollapalooza.
I mean, you gotta. People. I mean, dig back, dude.
Well, no, it's a thing. It's the mud people.
Nine Inch Nails in '94. That's where it was at. So I mean,
right.
you got to think the mud pits. Then it was a memorable show.
Yeah. Right. So yeah. I think the mud people didn't really, you know, become a thing, like an actual, you know, term, mud people.
That's why
until
they
94
changed
at Woodstock.
That's why they changed it to 99. But
beware
it
the mud people. Yeah. I love that. Mud. They have like little chants. They all get in there. So, mud people. Mud people.
Mud people, in layman's terms, I guess, would be the people that were hardcore.
Yeah, drunk idiots throwing mud at each
other. No, crazy good
hardcore moshers.
Yeah.
Wow. Drunk idiots throwing mud at each other. Okay. Okay, so the new one was set, Woodstock 99, I say the new one, Woodstock 99 was set at a Griffiths Air Force Base in Rome, New York, approximately 100 miles away from the original site. The problem with that is, what's the problem with big Air Force bases? I wouldn't say a problem for Air Force personnel, but a problem for pedestrians. Long runways of nothing but hot
asphalt. Tarmac
so
in the summer.
We want to start where, what time of the year
yes.
was it? When did they have this festival?
Summer. Summer.
July?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. Perfect timing.
Okay, so even though July, because I grew up in New Jersey,
yeah.
even though summer isn't like as hot as it is here in Florida, it's not like, you know. If you did it here in Florida, it would be fucking horrendous.
90 degrees is 90 fucking degrees, man. It's hot wherever you're at.
Exactly.
Well, they still
but
did.
But here in Florida.
On the pavement at the
they
stadium.
Did. They did. But the thing was, at Woodstock 99, they were walking across from the campsite. They were walking across the tarmac to the festival. And when they got to the festival, there was no water. There was no redemption when they got there.
Yeah, and there was
no kinda
shade.
Like, oh, we're either all out or you can go stand on line over there.
Right, because you also got to think along with those Air Force Base, we're thinking Air Force Base here. What's not going to be an Air Force Base in abundance? Trees.
Trees, no shelter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No shelter.
So there's no shelter, there's no shade, and they're on these hot tarmacs. That's
well,
step
think
one.
About they have 400,000 people.
Right.
How many hundreds of thousands of water bottles do they have?
Who knows?
They didn't
Millions.
Have enough. No, they didn't have enough. That was the problem.
Well, I mean, you got to think they tried.
I guess.
They tried. Well, see, they definitely tried because they were charging, you know, $4 a piece.
Which is $7 today's term.
Which is kind of what they charge now. They charge $4 a piece now.
Yeah, if you go to a football stadium, they're charging $6 a water.
That's right. Insane. It's insanity, dude. It's highway robbery.
Exactly.
And so anyway, so that's what you got. That's where the setting is. That's where they're at. And the main difference is, like we talked about, there is two main stages, a couple secondary venues, and we've got a couple amenities like we have, or obstacles as they will become later, and weapons, ATM machines, email booths, you have merch tents, you have all these different kind of things going on, right?
Right.
Okay, and so we're going to start. We've walking into the festival, which was $150, I think, for the weekend?
Which
I think is what it was.
A fucking steal.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of like 250 modern or something.
I couldn't even think about paying for a weekend festival $150 these days. I mean,
especially
I
with that lineup.
But yeah. You got to account the back then prices versus today's prices.
Right.
So probably would have been about $300, but double the price.
And so, you know, kicking things off in the very beginning of the festival, who did we have? Because it was they had a pre-show, right? Because they had a Thursday, a Friday, Saturday, and a Sunday.
Well, you had Spitfire, you had Mo.
We're talking Thursday, the pre-show?
Yep.
Oh, no, okay. I'm talking Friday.
No, let's talk the pre-show Thursday.
It was G-Love, and then you had
Can you pull it up?
Yeah.
That's what we need to see.
G-Love and the Special Sauce, which is sweet.
Yeah.
You're going to have all the badass 90s bands.
Oh, Red Herring. I mean, all you techno people don't, you know, are going to know what I'm talking about. Red Herring was popular back then.
Was it?
Yeah.
String Cheese Incident.
Yep.
They were there. George Clinton.
Yeah.
P-Funk All-Stars.
It looks like George Clinton was kind of headlining that night.
Well, yeah. Yeah, between them and G-Love.
Especially adding into
that's
the weekend.
That's a great
way to start it out.
Great pre-show.
I'll take it.
Just a dip your toe in the water type appetizer to the main show.
Oh, yeah.
And that would have been cool. I think that would have been a really good set to see to open things up. It was kind of a mild set, not nothing too heavy.
Especially with G-Love.
Yeah.
I mean, they probably ended the night out with George Clinton.
Yeah.
But absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people knew who String Cheese were back then, but they were kind of just like, you know, up and coming back then.
Fair enough. I mean,
nowadays on the festival circuits, everybody knows who they are. They're doing three nights, you know, in a row.
Bluegrass, right. A little odd, in my opinion. A little odd for what they were trying to achieve. And
right.
Well, it was a Thursday night. You know, they
I would have to say that was an oddball.
Great
band.
It was.
They probably, because awesome you had a lot of people, badass. You got to think, the majority of people coming to the show are traveling to the show, too. So this was probably a very, in the sense of a 400,000 person attendance record for this festival, they probably had a very low attendance rate for that pre-show night.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe half.
I can't disagree with you.
Yeah, maybe half, maybe a little bit less. Who knows?
Yeah,
but it was a good dip your toe in the water, kind of come into the festival.
Yeah.
So that went well. That day went well. And even Friday went well. Right? Friday, we started picking up the pace a little bit with the lineup. We had what? Lit. That was a really big band from the 90s and early 2000s.
Right. Mo.
James Brown.
Buck Cherry, The Roots.
Buck Cherry. That was a surprising one for me.
ICP?
Yeah, fuck that.
I've seen him a few times. I was at a couple shows.
I didn't know Buck Cherry was from back then in the 90s.
Absolutely.
I thought they were like a mid to late 2000s band.
Well, George Clinton was on Friday night as well.
Yeah.
So I mean,
what a cool
absolutely touche. I didn't know that.
What a cool lineup. I think to have these guys and James Brown, right? And you also had DMX, Sheryl Crow, live
on Friday.
Yeah, a lot of them played double sets.
Jamiroquai.
Yeah, a lot of them played double sets. At least from what I read about the lineups, a lot of them played
Sugar
double
Ray.
Sets.
One of my favorites.
The Offspring.
The
so Korn was Friday night.
Yeah,
and so was Bush.
Yeah, that would have been fucking cool.
I won't disagree.
Now,
Now
let's go into a little bit of the dark side.
Was it?
So
yep. I didn't get to see them till later on.
I know Saturday night was when the dark side of the festival started, but people were saying during that Korn set.
Oh yeah,
there was gang raping going.
Gang raping,
right?
Could you imagine that being at a music show?
Like, so you're a girl and you're floating above the crowd in a mosh pit, and then all of a sudden, like three or four or five or however many guys drag you down into the pit. And then start fucking sodomizing
you and gang.
Yeah, it's horrible.
That's awful.
I couldn't even imagine that.
And I remember watching Korn's set from back then. It's on YouTube. I was a member. And Jonathan Davis stopped multiple times to say, hey, you motherfuckers need to cut that shit out. Because you know Jonathan Davis. He is not about that shit.
Right.
He does not put up with it.
Of course not.
No, he was.
Nobody would put up with that.
No. I mean, but he's not going to turn a blind eye and just focus on the music. Because you know there's a lot of prima donna bands out there that would just, you know, they'll see it, but they'll kind of play through it.
I would have been in trouble if somebody touched my girl like that.
Right.
It would have been over.
But can you physically imagine that?
Your girl is way back, right? She gets floated. She gets pushed to the front. You're nowhere near that. You know, you're not going to talk to her for another hour or so. You know,
and they didn't have cell phones.
What they did to those women.
Yeah, I would have I would have beeped her. Send her a page.
Send her a page or
doing
a beep.
Okay.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have got to her, man.
That's crazy.
Just a significant amount of just physical and sexual abuse. That was step one. Because Friday, by the end of Friday, this is, you know, because people usually start trying to slow down a little bit after they've had a dose of a hangover or two. And they may have a little bit of a wisp from one from
Thursday.
That's
why a lot of people didn't go Thursday. Because I know when I go to four-day festivals, I never usually go on Thursday. And if I do, I'm not going to go hard on Thursday night. I'm going to wait till Friday to go super hard.
So this day, they're in their prime. They're in their most aggressive. Then they're in their most riled up.
Right.
Because Saturday.
Because everybody was there Friday night for Korn.
Right.
You know, the Offspring and then Korn. So, I mean, by the time Korn came out on stage, people were fucking
lost out of their minds. Yeah. And it's something cool, too. I know I keep going back to it. If you go check out Korn's live set from Woodstock 99, this is when Falling Away From Me was, this was their, hey, we're going to play you something off our new fucking album. And it was, you know, that was the Falling Away From Me. And it's completely different than the one that the track they put out on the CD. So if you want to hear a different rendition of a couple of their songs, go ahead. And you want to go see a bunch of titties, because there was a bunch of boobs out and stuff like that on the video too.
I mean, that's when they were really at their prime, man.
The Chemical Brothers, they were like, hello, look at me.
Yeah.
I would have loved to see this set list. I mean, basically, second album, they just came out with Follow the Leader, basically.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. In the set list, Encore, My Gift to You by Slayer, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
I would love to see that.
Are we even allowed to say the last name, the last song?
No, probably shouldn't. But see, Korn has a bunch of, they like to play
it
on that.
Rhymes with maggot.
Yeah. All the Korn fans.
That's all we're going to say about that.
Yeah. Korn's always been an intriguing band to me because they've always kind of played that nuance of the kids from high school that got picked on, that never got paid attention to, the misunderstood goth kids.
Fair enough.
You know what I mean?
What intrigued me with them was them playing, a six-string guitar, six-string bass?
Yeah.
I mean, their sound was just so low.
I think it was a seven-string guitar and seven-string bass.
Whoa, and I never heard anything like it.
Yeah.
You know, that was the beauty about Korn. Perfect.
They were playing in drop B, drop C.
Yep.
It was awesome.
Yep. And this is before Head left and went on his Jesus trip.
Absolutely.
You know, and so it was killer. I actually met them during their Twisted Transistor tour, not my favorite album, but during their Twisted Transistor tour, and I got them to sign some shit for me, and they were really down-to-earth guys, and so I would have really have liked to have been there. But anyway, so at this time, the shitstorm is starting to swell.
Yeah.
In
the
festival.
Well, after Korn. It was kind of like cool. Everybody was having a great time. Peace, love, and granola again.
Yeah.
Just like 69, until after Korn set, and it was kind of like, you know, something happened during Korn where we're just kind of like, you know, not pissed off yet.
Right.
But we're kind of like, we're muddled. We're getting, you know, we're kind of stirred up right now.
Yeah. Well, they were the heaviest thing there. They were the new metal bringing.
Right.
Because you had a lot of the pop punk bands there, you know.
So are we going to go into Saturday morning now?
Might as well.
We should.
Let's jump into Saturday morning. Everybody wakes up. Everybody's kind of in a good mood. We're all going to kind of like toke out.
I don't think I'd be in a good mood.
And we're going to be toking out. We're going to have a good time. And then they get to the food stands and the water stands. And guess what? We're either charging a shit ton of money or we don't have any.
Right. Well, I don't know about you with festivals, because along the same lines of going your hardest on the first day that you're there, that's also when you're in that state of mind, right? You're drunk. Money doesn't kind of has a way of falling to the wayside. And you don't really give a shit. You know what I mean? Like, at least with me, I'm like, fucking $30 burrito, give me four of them. Fucking,
yeah,
duh.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Then you wake up the next morning, you're like, what did I spend last night?
I spent $80 on nachos? What the fuck?
Nobody's remembering.
You already knew what you were getting into. Listen, fuck it.
Nobody's got smartphones.
You're right.
Okay? So no one's looking at their bank accounts.
Good old days.
They're thinking like, what did I spend last night? Eh, who cares?
Right. And so back then, $10 for a burrito, $12 for pizza, and $4 for water, like we talked about. That's a lot of money.
Ridiculous.
That's a lot of money, man. And so by this time,
a lot of people are bringing their own shit and
trying
and barbecuing their own shit. But
trying.
I think the majority of people probably were like, oh shit, I didn't bring enough money.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Right. And so now these people are waking up Saturday morning. They're kind of going, wow, huh, we've got two more days of this shit, and I don't have a whole lot of money to eat, and I don't have a whole lot of money to drink water. And so they're getting hammered. Mm-hmm. It's 90-something degrees outside.
And fucking Bruce Hornsby comes on stage.
Yeah.
For God's sakes.
Yeah. Fucking Moby, man. No.
The Los Lobos come on stage.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah, exactly. So this is when shit starts to pick up a little bit. And so Alanis Morissette comes on and starts to kind of chill stuff out a little bit. And immediately following, here comes Fred Durst and his merry band of fucking biscuits.
No. When does Fred Durst come on? I mean, I'm looking at my set list here. When is... Oh, shit. So the 8:05 to 9:05 is Fred Durst.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the Chemical Brothers is after Fred Durst.
Okay. So yeah, so Limp Bizkit is on stage doing what they do.
So well, we have a couple bands. Up. We have a couple bands that were, you know, mid afternoon, kind of Everclear. They were big back in those days.
Yeah.
Okay. We had Collective Soul. You know, those guys were fucking killer back in those days. You know? Yeah. But the day as a whole, if I'm looking over the Saturday list. You know, we have Sugar Ray, we have Live, we have Jamiroquai, you know, we have Sheryl Crow, you know.
This
is Friday.
Brownies and Lemonade.
Oh, we have the Counting Crows, we got Dave Matthews Band. Okay, so we have cool bands. Shut the fuck up.
Cool bands
we
are
have
playing.
Cool bands playing. And then you have Alanis Morissette. Everybody's just like, you know what, I'm getting fucking wasted because she's a stupid asshole.
She is not.
Yeah, but that's how I would think. I'm going to get wasted before Limp Bizkit comes out and tears shit up because it's 1999 and Limp Bizkit is number one on the top in the Billboard charts right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think they had a really big pickup because, you know, you had Kid Rock there too. Mm-hmm. He was there on Saturday. And like you said, Everclear.
Oh, yeah. He played early.
Yeah.
It was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Everybody's still sleeping.
And Ice Cube, he played. And so, I mean, people were by the time Alanis got on there, they were riled up a good bit. And then this stigma of, fuck, how am I going to eat and how am I going to drink is starting to fuel shit up a little bit. And so they actually planned it this way. They planned Alanis to come on to kind of chill things out a little bit. And personally, I would have loved to have seen her back then.
But we're leaving.
I won't disagree.
We're leaving out the
not
fact.
Not too long after she came out with Jagged Little Pill, 96.
Yeah.
It was 3 years.
So, I mean, not bad.
No, not at all. You know?
Yeah.
So all the lesbos and all the women, how they're filled with her. And then, but that's not what I'm trying to get to. I'm just saying as a point, that's kind of like, you know, all there, right there,
mm-hmm.
before the Rage and the Metallica and the fucking, you know, Limp Bizkit goes on stage. So earlier in the day on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
there was a water fountain line that was from here to Kingdom Come. Mm-hmm. And so people decided to take whatever they can find and start fucking breaking the pipes, and the pipes broke and started leaking all over the place, and that's where the mud pits actually came from.
So okay, leads back to Limp Bizkit doing break stuff.
It does,
right?
But okay. So then, flash forward to Limp Bizkit's, you know, start of their thing. Okay, so that we have these 10-foot gates all around the perimeter of the property with sandbags, and you have plywood shoved up against these gates. They're taking these pieces of plywood, full pieces of plywood, and they're putting them in the mosh pits. And then they're rising them up so people actually have platforms to fucking jump off of.
Right.
So there's like probably, I don't know, like 15, 20 different pieces of fucking plywood that they're using as platforms at this time to get up onto stages, you know, climb stage, you know, towers and stuff. And then they're using those same platforms to fucking jump off and hit people in the fucking with an elbow in their eye. You know, I mean, it's just insanity. So now, you know, I think that they learned from Woodstock 99 that we can't use plywood anywhere on the inside of any festival.
Well, I'm sure.
After that.
I'm sure a lot of different things came from here. A lot of different lessons learned came from this festival.
Right.
Along those same lines with the water fountain stuff, because they were a lot of people were leaving and going, trying to go out in town to eat. And you got to think, this is in Rome, New York. This is a very, this is not a big place.
Yeah, it's not like Miami.
You know, the supermarkets were selling out. They had lines wrapped around buildings at 7-Elevens. They were selling out of everything. And so they, along what you were saying with the people breaking the water pipes, they were doing this out in town too. They were finding water fountains at like schools and shit, and they were breaking the water pipes there just to drink. So this almost...
What were they using, though, to break those water pipes?
Anything they could.
But seriously, you have to turn that bitch like...
If you're thirsty...
If I'm thirsty enough, I'll throw my body at a water pipe.
You're going to figure out whatever you've got to do to get what you got to get.
I don't think
it's... Instead of spending $10 for a bottle of water, you know, 20 years ago.
I'm just saying, like, what were they using to take, you know, sealed pipes and busting them?
Kick it?
Something.
No, there's no way. They would have to have some kind of help.
Apparati?
Something, though. Something.
So, like we said, Limp Bizkit, and it, interestingly enough, in the documentary, if you ever get a chance to see it, they actually talk about everybody blaming Limp. Everybody still blames Limp Bizkit for all this shit happening. Because this was the start. When Limp Bizkit came on, this was the beginning of the crazy shit. The water fountain stuff, that's fine. There wasn't enough bathrooms, so there was piss flowing into the streets. You know, everybody's freaking out, but everybody's losing their shit. But it's not on like a hundreds of thousands of dollars scale yet. When Limp Bizkit came on, because like Mark said, they were surfing on these things of plywood, these big sheets of plywood that they're pulling off the venue, stages, lighting poles, they were climbing lighting towers, they were surfing on these things, and he egged them on. He liked it. He was like, dude, that fucking surfing shit, and he got out there with them.
Yeah.
On the plywood.
Yeah.
Was surfing with them, Fred Durst, the proverbial him. Was out there surfing with these guys, and that's when shit really broke. When they were like, "Oh, fucking Fred Durst is out here doing this, you know, doing this shit with us too." So that's when they started really fucking shit up, pulling lights down, pulling towers.
Rioting.
Oh, it was riots.
And it was during this same period where I read this article about one of the MTV reporters that were in the crowd during Limp Bizkit. It was about the same time where they had these earpieces in and all of the reporters got pulled out. They said, please, everybody who's involved with MTV, please leave the immediate area. Come back to the red
or the green room
right now. So they all, like, you know, had no idea what was actually going on because they were just doing their MTV deal. Like, oh, what do you think? What do you think? Okay.
Yeah.
So they were like, what?
Okay. Was that Carson? I think Carson Daly was out there.
Whoever was there.
Yeah, was he?
I mean, you got to think, man.
They were all over the place.
This was right in the prime
of it.
Of this kind of music playing.
Yeah.
And
Any music media coverage, MTV was there.
Yeah, absolutely. The roots were starting for this song, Break Stuff, for Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
And like I said, Limp Bizkit was in their prime. Literally, first album, $3 Bill, y'all, just came out with, what was that? What was the album after that?
I don't know, man. I'm not a Bizkit fan.
Chocolate Starfish.
And the hot dog flavored water. Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
It's the chocolate starfish.
In my opinion, that was their decline because they sounded nothing like their first album.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they were huge back then. So, I mean, I get it. It was what's up. Then, what I mean, who was coming on after that? I mean, you still had other great bands.
Oh, you said Rage, Metallica?
Right. Yeah. My fucking God. Two of the biggest bands in the world.
And so everybody's riled up at this point. There's ATM machines getting broken. And you know what's funny, too, I think about Limp Bizkit? I don't really like them. Not my forte. I don't not like them. They're just not my...
Back in 99, everybody liked them.
Everybody liked them. You know, Jinkos and all that shit. Everybody was listening to Limp Bizkit.
I did.
They were never really my forte. I listened to that song Rollin' when they wrote it because I used to watch wrestling a lot. The Undertaker's theme song,
and they were from Jacksonville, man.
They were from Jacksonville, right?
But I mean, I was living in South Florida at the time. But another key thing about the Limp Bizkit set is that kind of the same thing happened with Korn with the gang raping, but it was even worse during Limp Bizkit.
Oh yeah,
there was multiple gang rapes going on.
Well, there was injuries too. People were starting to get hurt. It was starting to get dangerous at this festival.
Right
at this point.
But I want to kind of like say, like, seriously, I've never heard of a festival in my life except for this one that gang rape was going on. I mean, are you serious?
Yeah.
Are you fucking serious right now?
Yeah, and that's the tough part of it, but. You know, with Limp Bizkit, and like you guys were saying, how huge they were at the time, and I think I think they were so big because they were not quite nu metal, but you know, they weren't getting accepted by anybody.
You know what they were? They were rap metal.
Rap metal. And that's
that was one of the first, because I think they came before Linkin Park.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So,
oh, yeah.
I mean, they were the first of their kind, like, yeah. You know, like, keep rolling.
You know, but you yeah. never, yeah, right, you never really heard that. A little bit from Insane Clown Posse, but nobody fucking likes them anyway. Just right. kidding. Sorry if you, whatever you guys are called, juggalettes or juggalos. And
juggalos.
Shit. Yeah, so, that. Well, sorry for that. And then they
go throwing juggalos.
Yeah, and then they, and so Limp Bizkit was kind of in a realm of their own at the time, because you had seen some rock guys work with rap artists, like with Anthrax, when they did Bring the Noise with Public Enemy. Right, but you didn't have any like it metal rock,
right?
It or wasn't, rap
it
metal
wasn't out. A 50-50 in band, in house,
yeah,
type deal,
right? Right, and so anyway, this is when the festival started shaking the fucking doors down. This is when promoters start getting concerned. This is when right, shit started getting right. thrown around, broken. This is when people started getting injured, and this is when the whole mood changed in the place, the security and people were losing control.
I mean, don't get us wrong, there is. Thousands and thousands of people that went to this festival that didn't experience any of this stuff. They didn't even see any of this stuff going on.
Right.
I mean, they were kind of just like, oh, what were they talking about? Because my whole experience with this festival was great. You know, so, but apparently in the band, you know, there was all this other stuff going on, all this craziness, but, all this physical altercations,
yeah,
you know, and
but
raping.
Like Drew said, with the rest of the set list for the evening, you got Rage Against the Machine and fucking Metallica. How did the shithole hit the fan with Limp Bizkit?
Yeah, because
Dave Matt.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
You also had Dave Matthews playing as well. That was playing. It was a great show. Yes, understandably so, that Limp Bizkit when it started happening. But there were other bands that were playing great set lists, great music, but it did. It started out like a riot. It basically ensued a riot with a bunch of other
bands. Well, Fred Durst said, okay, everybody, grab that shit and fucking start fucking each other up. We're going to go break stuff tonight. You know, and then that's when they started, like, maybe we'll keep break stuff tonight, you know. And so everybody's just fucking the anger songs and the anger and all those fucking frat boys came out of the fucking woodwork and like, yeah, we're going to fuck shit up now. And so like, and then at the end, he said something like, okay, guys, everybody just chill out, man. We're going to be all cool now. And
it's nobody, a good impersonation.
And everybody's like, no, man, we ain't cool now. We're all amped up and drunk and wasted off our asses. Okay, we'll see you later because Metallica's coming out and Rage Against the Machine. Have a good time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, That's how it ended up. He was egging on the crowd.
Well, yeah.
To go ahead.
Well, I understand the dynamics of how it happened, but I'm just saying, like, of any band to lose your shit to, it's the Bizkit.
I mean,
but don't you forget?
Yeah, I can't.
In 1999, man, they were on top of the fucking
world. You're right.
They were like, I can't even think. What's a band these days that's the top of the world right now? Slipknot.
Oh, I don't know.
They were Slipknot level back
Hosier.
Then. They were Slipknot. Listen.
Don't get me started.
I know Slipknot level was Slipknot back then, too. But
oh, yeah.
But they were the Slipknot status.
I mean, then Rage comes on.
Yeah, Burns the American Flag.
They haven't even come out with Battle of Los Angeles. So they're playing their self-titled. They're playing Evil Empire.
Which is awesome.
I mean, straight up.
Awesome.
And then that happens. So that's going to end soon. I would be all over that.
They were actually calmer during Rage than they were during the Bizkit.
I would be calmer watching Rage.
Yeah.
Well, and honestly, because you don't have a lead singer going, everybody grab something and fucking kill each other. You
know yeah.
I mean? All right.
I guess. But I don't know, man, though. Once again,
you know, Zach ain't doing that, dude. Zach is just chill, man. He's like, let's burn the American flag and just fucking watch it burn. You know, he ain't trying to fucking ensue a riot.
It is.
It's funny, in their own extreme way, I feel like Rage Against the Machine was the closest thing to one of those governmental war protest bands that Woodstock 69 had. I think Rage was probably the closest thing that they had, just on a more extreme level.
Oh, yeah.
You know, obviously, I mean, but
who,
like,
who was the president back then in 99?
That would have been Clinton. Right?
Was it Clinton?
Clinton to Bush?
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the two.
One of the two. Clinton or Bush?
I'd say what? It was President Bush. I mean, yeah.
I think it was Bush, actually.
I mean, you weren't too far off.
It was Clinton.
You weren't too far off of September 11th at that time, so 99, definitely before.
No, it wasn't Clinton.
I mean, I'm not saying that.
So one of them.
I'm going to have to say, yeah. I mean, everybody was all over it. It was, you know, presidential July. It was, everybody was all about it. Rage was just about to come out with their new album. And it was a great set list. And then you had Metallica come on to end the show.
Which was fucking great.
Oh, dude, and their set list was amazing.
They played Sunday night, right? Or was it
Saturday?
Saturday night.
12:45.
I would love to see them at 12:45 in the morning.
It was 11:15 to 12:45 though.
I would have loved to have seen that set list. They played so many rare songs that Metallica never plays live, like Bleeding Me. That's an 8-minute song. They never play that song. And this is back in the Jason Newsted era, right?
When they were kicking hard, dude.
This was Metallica in their, like, we're not thrash metal anymore. We're going to move to this new genre, new metal thing. We're going to try this out. And they were fucking killing it. They played Master of Puppets, Fuel, King Nothing, Bleeding Me. They did some of their Garage Inc. covers that they did. Turn the Page.
Fight Fire with Fire.
Yeah. And did they do Die, My Darling?
There you go.
Misfits cover,
You love that, right?
Motherfucker, dude. That was probably my one. Seek and Destroy. Yeah, Seek and Destroy.
That was one of their final songs.
Yeah, that was the encore song, right?
Yeah.
And if you guys got to go back and at least watch that performance. If you don't watch any of them, go watch Rages and go watch Korn's and go watch Metallica's.
I bought the fucking double disc for Woodstock 99, and they didn't have Rage or Metallica on that disc.
Really?
No.
No way. Really?
Swear to God, dude. I swear.
Who was the band that was on this set list? The lineup at that time that just blows my mind that they were on there. I'm just like...
Sheryl Crow? Yeah, right. That was one for me.
Al Green.
There was just somebody on there. I was like, it was just the time, and they had
Willie Nelson.
I'd be cool with Willie Nelson.
He played on Sunday.
Brian cool Seltzer Orchestra.
Yeah.
I think it was one of their main bands that they had.
How about this Sunday? Let's move into Sunday a little bit. How about fucking Creed featuring Robbie Krieger?
I have nothing to say about that.
How about that?
Nope.
Sucking on a chili dog.
They don't.
Robbie Krieger from The Doors.
I'm sucking on a chili dog. I can't stand myself. Won't Krieger, you feed I'm cool me? With. Feed me.
Yeah.
I can't let it go.
Jesus Lord. But anyway, so that was Saturday. Saturday was chaos stricken, but also a beautiful set. An amazing, amazing list of bands.
Everlast was on there, which I personally liked back in those days.
I like Everlast back in the Whitey Ford Sing the Blues era. I think Everlast has got such a swaggy style to him, the way he sings.
But they had fucking Creed way too late. I guess they were popular back then, I guess.
Oh, we got to talk about Red Hot Chili Peppers. We can't move on. We got to talk about Red Hot Chili Peppers.
They had Creed come on at 7 to 8:20 right before the Chili Peppers.
Yeah.
Like, they must have been like fucking... like the shit back in 99 because they are a piece of shit these days.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the set list on Sunday. We're going to get to the famous events. There was a Saturday and Sunday both had their famous bands.
Can we start off with 11 in the morning? Fucking Al Green. Mr. fucking Al Green, dude. He's a legend.
That'd have been cool.
11 a.m., dude.
That'd have been cool.
Sunday morning.
Yeah.
There's no way any of us are waking up for that.
Oh, I'd be up. I'd been up. I'd have been up.
I would have tried to get up.
And then Willie. Willie at noon.
And another legend, Willie Nelson, follows him right
How
up.
How cool would that would have been? Just to kind of like, everybody's kind of waking up.
Again.
Yeah, and they're just sitting there. Listening to Georgia On My Mind and while they're eating their fucking $12 nachos that they're pissed about.
Cool with that. Like we were talking about earlier. Everybody raging. Yeah, I would have been waiting for Sunday to see that.
Oh, fuck
yeah.
Yes.
But just a lot of unique bands,
then
too,
Brian
on Sunday.
Brian Seltzer.
Yeah.
I mean, he was on the DVD, and he was kicking ass, dude. He was riding that bass like a fucking horse, dude. Like, you know, one of those stand-up basses. He was having it on the ground. He was riding that boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
It was fucking badass.
Yeah. And then Everlast after that. And then Elvis Costello.
He's an icon.
Yeah. Remember and then it. Jewel. How weird is that?
Super hot. Super iconish.
I've got a story about that.
About Jewel?
Well, kind of.
Let's hear it.
I mean,
tis the time.
We'll dabble into that later.
Okay.
I got a story about that. It's kind of cool, but we'll stay with Woodstock.
All right.
99 Sunday.
Then you have Creed, which is garbage.
With Robbie Krieger.
That's cool.
I mean,
I don't like Creed,
at the time, it was cool because Robbie Krieger, he's an icon.
Mm-hmm.
Creed at the time, they were icons. So I mean, yeah. I could see it.
Yeah.
I could see it.
So now let's get on to when the shit ball hit the fan on Sunday. Let's get onto that one with Red Hot Chili Peppers. So there was a, obviously you had your promoters, you had your tents, you had your promoters, you had your merch tents, your food tents. So there's this one group of peace promoters there, and correct me if I'm wrong, Drew, because I might have this story muddled, but called PAX. They were distributing candles during their merch to, you know, burn during a Red Hot Chili Peppers song.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
What song were they supposed to? Because I know what they did burn it to, and what Fire. They were supposed to burn it to were two separate things. I think it was Under the Bridge. Because it was to honor somebody.
Under the Bridge. Everybody knows what that song is about.
Right.
But it was supposed to be with that song, but everybody didn't do that, and they waited till the end when they played Fire, which is a cover by Jimi Hendrix.
Right.
Awesome.
Right.
I mean. Yeah, it went crazy.
So, yeah. So if you'll remember, back up a couple minutes, you'll remember when we talked about during Limp Bizkit, they were pulling off this shit off the, you know, all this plywood. They were destroying all these things. They were pushing over trailers. They were trashing and looting merch tents. They were destroying ATM machines to try to get food money. So all of this shit that these people were destroying wasn't getting picked up and going into a dumpster. It was getting pushed into giant piles or pyres, if you will.
Yep,
And so all of this flammable, I'm talking bottles, old shirts, all the just plywood, broken shit was all in these giant, like almost like if you uncovered a landfill real quick, that's what it looked like, these giant mounds of fucking trash and wood. And so when they all had lit their candles, they all started lighting these giant piles of junk, these pyres of fueled chaos in the middle of the crowd. And Anthony Kiedis steps back and he's like, dude, it looks like fucking Armageddon out there. And they start playing Jimi Hendrix's Fire. And holy shit. They have a bunch of video footage on the documentaries from like bystanders on ridges and on hilltops and stuff looking. It literally looks like a battlefield.
Oh yeah,
at Woodstock 99 right now.
If nobody's ever seen Red Hot Chili Peppers, must go see them. Seen them a lot. They play a great show.
I've seen them.
They play a lot of good things from every album. But that particular day and that set list, these guys were not stupid. They knew what they were doing. They played exactly what they wanted to play. They did it.
They closed out the festival.
Having them fires, it just insinuated it, and it made it better for worse to good, I guess. I mean, but I wish I was out there witnessing that.
Fires oh, my God. Monumental event.
But I mean, I would never forget that day, especially when the Red Hot Chili Peppers were on top of the world at that time.
Oh, yeah.
And that shit happening. I mean, all in all, with Woodstock 99, it was pure anarchy, chaos.
Chaos.
And it makes every festival or anything we go to nowadays better.
Yeah.
That's what it is. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But I wish I had those bands playing a lot of the festivals that we have to this day.
Oh, my God, and dude. I wish I would have been able to see Red Hot Chili Peppers in their prime, because I saw them a few years ago when they came here to Jacksonville, and they were good.
See, if you see Mustache Anthony.
Mustache Anthony.
It's before the mustache was when you wanted to see it.
Pre-stash is when you needed it. I didn't get the chance.
Sure. I disagree.
I didn't get the chance.
I'm not saying that they're not great to see, but you know, when you wanted to see the raw Flea and the raw Anthony and the running around with light bulbs or mime clown suits.
He's
back now.
He's back.
He just came back.
He's back.
So I would think the Red Hot Chili Peppers is kind of like, to me, I'm sorry if anybody disagrees, but they're like the Rolling Stones of the American modern age for the past 20 years. I mean, they have so many fucking hits. They have so many, you know, great live performances. I mean, they're just like unstoppable.
They are. I mean, I wouldn't. I don't know. For me, I like I said, I really wish I would have seen them in a different era, because it kind of put a bad taste in my mouth, because they didn't play a long set when I saw them, and they had that fucking baby metal band open up for them, and I was sitting there. I thought it was a joke because I had never heard of this baby metal shit. I'm sure. Do you know who I'm talking about? Baby metal.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll play it after this, and you'll be like, what in the fuck? So it's these three little young. I think they're Japanese girls.
Yeah, and they do shit like that,
anime shit. And I was sitting there like half cocked, man. And I'm sitting here like, watching because they didn't announce who the opener was. And then these girls come out and they're doing this shit and doing that yeah bullshit. And I'm like, what? I thought it was a joke. I thought Guar was going to come out and like chop their heads off or something.
The first time,
you know?
I've seen, out of the multiple times I've seen the Red Hot Chili Peppers was 92 at Lollapalooza.
And that I bet you that was good.
Really good. That was the light bulbs that came out with the mime clown suits. And yeah, Flea came out with naked, except for the bass.
Yeah.
I saw him with the light bulbs. The Space Hog opened up for him. Yeah. I've seen the Red Hot Chili Peppers at least
Space Hog.
At least 10, 12 times, dude.
Yeah, I've seen really? Like five they're, or six. Oh, yeah,
good for you. That's
they're
awesome,
great.
Dude.
They're great. This set list that they played at this show, I wish I was there.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, so like you said, and I want to read something that Kurt Loder actually said, and he kind of summed it up best. It said, it was dangerous to be around. The whole scene was scary. There's just waves of hatred bouncing around this place. It was clear we had to get out of there. It was like a concentration camp. To get in, you were frisked and make sure you weren't bringing in any water or food that would prevent you from buying their outrageously priced booth food, and you wallow around in your own garbage and human waste. There was a palpable mood of anger.
Palpable mood.
Kurt Loder.
So I'll read just a little tidbit as well from one of the observers/photographers. They said it was supposed to be a celebration of the 30th anniversary of Woodstock 69. It's supposed to be peace, love, and happiness. Instead, the Rome, New York Festival earned the infamous distinction of the day the 90s died.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. The day that's when the 90s died, man. It was just too much violence and too much carnage going on.
Too much anarchy, man.
Yeah,
so,
it was cool until then.
Yeah.
And it just stopped.
There was four alleged instances of rape. One of them, which was the one woman that was pulled down from crowd surfing during Korn. There was approximately 12 trailers, a small bus, and a number of booths and portable toilets that were burned. 6 people injured, but no deaths. Thank God. Right? But I think the cost of all the damages, I believe, were in the millions. Over a million. Because, I mean, if you look at the footage, everything is destroyed. Merch tents, merch providers were run out of there, and their entire stock was stolen. Mm-hmm. It was just absolute, like Vikings hit the shore.
I think that was due to the promoters, the people that were doing Woodstock 99 that created that mess.
Yeah.
You know, and it sucks. I hope you're catching and understanding what I'm trying to say. It just sucks.
Absolutely, I do.
For that to happen, but I think they bit off more than they could chew.
Agreed.
Then, which changed the reality for all music festivals, which
absolutely.
I'm glad, which should have been before that. There was never any problems for anything. I've been to Lollapalooza, Horde Festival. I mean, there was never any problems like that before. But don't get me wrong, it wasn't like 400,000 people. But these people should have known what they were digging into and should have known and taken care of that.
Agreed.
And if it wasn't for that festival, things wouldn't be to what they are today.
Yeah. Well, and I also think the bottom line too, well, a bottom line of this festival is when you start getting greedy, people start getting pissed
off.
You know, and when you have 400,000 people that you're literally destroying them financially, dude, because you got to think, when it's 100 degrees outside and they have no shelter, they have nowhere to cool off, and you're going to freaking destroy them for a piece of pizza?
Those people asked for that.
Those people asked for it. Absolutely. That's where I was going with that. They asked for it.
They asked for that, and that sucks.
After Limp Bizkit set, the promoter should have come on and gone, all right, guys, we've cut the price of food and water in half. We have the National Guard coming in, or the some sort of contracted grocer company coming in to bring in pallets of water and food, complimentary, something. They should have given the people something, and then they would have taken the anger and the angst from here right down to there.
And you're right. And you're right. People do that nowadays.
They will do it now.
All they cared about was what they wanted, didn't give a shit.
Right.
It was a great festival, great lineup.
Great idea.
And it failed.
In and of itself, and it failed.
And it sucked.
Right. And it sucked. You're right. It sucked that it did fail just because of the sheer clientele that they had come to this thing.
Boom.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
It had the makings to be one of the best and biggest and most promising festivals to ever hit America.
Absolutely. Ironically, talking about that too, at the end of 99, we're talking about that, and we're coming to an end of a decade now. You know, it's just, it's cool to talk about and think about.
Right.
And we're well above and far beyond what that was then.
Right. Agreed. So,
I mean, I just want to add one more thing about the end of the festival with the Chili Peppers. So there was a group of peace promoters led by this anti-gun violence organization called PAX.
We already talked about that while you were taking a urine break, Mark.
Really?
We already talked about PAX and the candles and the fires and all that.
Oh, son of a bitch!
We already talked about all that. See, well, you got to keep up with the program, man.
Okay. Never mind, then, never mind. Kids. I am apparently a weak-bladdered son of a bitch over here.
Yeah. So anyway, guys, well, we welcome you back, and we are going to try to stay more consistent with our releasing of our episodes. It's been a little hectic for everybody with Christmas. We will be back either next week or the week after with an awesome topic that we are going to discuss currently. We love you. Thank you for stopping by, and we will see you motherfuckers next week.
Happy fucking New Year.
Happy New Year, guys.